And we're holding on Ayin Omid Bey's second line from the bottom. We're talking about the dinim of who's allowed to eat truma. We were discussing the point that an oral, a kohen who's an oral, is not allowed to eat truma. And we said there's machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and most other Rishonim, Rashi and most other Rishonim, whether the oral over here it includes somebody who can't have a bris milah because of the danger, because his brothers died from milah, as we learned previously on Daf Samach Daled. Is he also considered for this purpose an oral who can't eat truma? Rabbeinu Tam holds no, such a person actually is allowed to eat truma. He'd only be osur if either he deliberately doesn't want milah because he rejects the mitzvah, which is called a mumer, la'arelus, or if he's doing it because he doesn't want the pain or whatever, which then fine, you know, I mean, it doesn't make him a mumer, but nevertheless, it would still make him an oral. But if he doesn't do it because of the danger, Rabbeinu Tam would hold he's not considered an oral. Everybody else considers that he is. So in that connection, we're discussing when the pasuk says about the korban, we learned that we're learning a gzeirah shava from the korban Pesach to truma.
So who's the halacha like? Since you mentioned Rabbeinu Tam, who's the halacha like?
Well, practically speaking, I mean, we don't really have truma that kohenim eat nowadays, anyhow. So it's kind of a moot point since the kohenim nowadays don't eat truma anyhow. It's a hilchos shel mishicha. We would go according to the majority of Rishonim and say that he'd be also to eat truma. Anyway, so in that connection, we were discussing, so now we learned by Gzeira Shava from the Korban Pesach, where it says, Kol Oro Lo Yechol Boy, and we learned from that to truma. So we were discussing, now on the other hand, we don't learn everything from the Korban Pesach, because the Korban Pesach and Onan can eat, but truma and Onan could eat. So now, in this connection, we said that when we have the word boy, when it says kol oro lo yechol boy, so we wanted to say that that means. So we said that that means he's not allowed to eat. So on the one hand, so we said actually kol oro lo yechol boy is not teaching us that you would think it could be teaching us that an oro could eat truma, and we'll say no on the basis of gzeirah shava. But we said we did use a different word boy. When it says Tosha v'sachar lo yechol boy, it means that the boy over there teaches us about that an oinin is in fact allowed to eat truma. So now the Gemara says, what we said is milas schara v'avodah. We learn from the fact that it says Malta Oisei Oz Yoichol Boy that there's a mute. The word boy is a mute. That if he doesn't have his children and his slaves gemalit, then he can't eat the Korban Pesach, but he could eat truma as long as he himself has a mute. So the Gemara says Hashta Da'amad Boy LaDrosha Udasa. Now, if you're telling me that the word boy is coming for a drosha, then Kol Ben Neichol La Yoichol Boy Lomali. Then what is the part? We have another pasuk by the Korban Pesach that also uses the word boy. It says any Ben Neichor should not eat of it. A Ben Neichor is somebody. So literally, Ben Neichor would be a son of a stranger. So it would mean a goy. But we understand that from Torah Shabbat Peh that it actually means Mishan Isnaklu Ma'isav La'aviv Shemashemayim. Means somebody who acts in a way that's foreign and strange to Hashem. Meaning a mumer, a person who's decided to give up Yiddishkeit altogether, which is called a mumer l'chol atayra kula, or so you have this sort of thing as a mumer l'chol atayra kula, where he's given up Yiddishkeit altogether, mitzvahs altogether, versus you have, there can also be mumer l'dabar echad, where he's a mumer as far as one particular mitzvah. He's decided, in effect, that a certain mitzvah doesn't apply to him anymore. So here we're talking about where he's mumu l'chola torah kula, or also you have certain mitzvahs that are considered for that purpose the equivalent of kola torah kula, like avodah zarah and Shabbos. Anyway, so when it says kol ben necho lo yechol boy, so any ben necho is not allowed to eat of it, meaning of the Korban Pesach, what is that coming to tell us? And the answer is boy hamoras das peselos. It teaches us that only with the Korban Pesach is a mumer possible to eat truma, ve'en hamoras das peselos b'maiser, but it does not possible him from eating maiser sheni. Okay, what about when it says by the Korban Pesach kol oro lo yechol boy lomali? We have another boy again. We said kol oro lo yechol boy, and in fact we thought to say that that means that maybe an oral is allowed to eat truma, but we shot that down because we do after all have the Gzeira Shava that tells us otherwise. So what are we doing with the kol oral lo yecha boy? What are we doing with the wood boy? By the way, as far as Hamoras Das by Selos B'maisa, Tosfos brings from a different Gemara that says, as a matter of fact, it doesn't passel him from eating truma as well. The fact is that a mumer is allowed, he may not be allowed to eat the Korban Pesach, but he is allowed to eat Meiser, and that other Gemara also says that he is allowed to eat Truma. Okay, so Kol Oro Lo Yecha Boy Lomeli, when it says Kol Oro Lo Yecha Boy, what does the boy over there teach us? It means Boy Eina Oichal Av Oichal B'matzo Mor. It means that an Oro is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach, but he is allowed to eat matzah and morah, and in fact, not only allowed to, he has a mitzvah of it. Which some Rishonim say that maybe it doesn't need to say morah over here, because the fact is that morah goes together with the Korban Pesach. When there's no mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach, there's no mitzvah of eating morah either. And in fact, for that reason, morah nowadays, when we have no Korban Pesach, is only drabanan. Nevertheless, some Rishonim justify why it's so. It could just be because the common expression is that we put matzah and morah together, but there are Rishonim who justify that there is a reason to mention morah over here, that and say that he nevertheless has a chiyuv of it. Anyway, so now we have two different things. We're saying that a korban pesach, that an oral is not allowed to eat a korban pesach, and a ben necher is not allowed to eat a korban pesach. So why do we need both of them? It has to say both of them. We couldn't have said one, and we've learned the other one. By the way, Rashi and Tosfos both point out that when we're saying kol oro lo yecha boy lomeli, it can't be to tell. So both of them point out. Now there's another pasuk, toshav b'sachar lo yecha boy. The Gemara is not even asking about the boy of that, because we know already, we established before, that the pasuk Toshav B'Sachar Lo Yecha Boy is there basically for the Gzeira Shava to tell us that an oral can't eat truma, and therefore there's no need to ask why it says the word boy in it, because that's all part of the Gzeira Shava to tell us that that an oral can't eat truma. But on the other hand, we're asking about kol oro lo yecha boy, and so we said it means that he can't eat, so it doesn't mean that the oro can eat korban pesach, but it can't eat korban pesach, but he could eat truma. We showed with the kavah chomer from the word toshav v'sach, with the gzeir shava from the word toshav v'sacher, that it's not so, but rather the boy teaches us that nevertheless he has a chiyuv of matzah and morah. So the Gemara says, "Ve'itzruch lemichtav oro, ve'itzruch lemichtav kol ben necher." Now, the fact is, we do have to say both of them in the pasuk that an oro can't eat korban pesach, and by the way, can't eat truma, and that he can't, and that a ben necher can't eat korban pesach. We need both of them. The e kosev rachmana oro, because if it only said that an oro can't eat the korban pesach, you would say mishum de mois. You know why? Because the mila, because not having a mila, having an orla is a disgusting thing. There's a Mishnah elsewhere in Nedarim that says ma'usa hi ha'orla. The orla is a disgusting thing that a person should have attached to his body, and therefore we would say as long as a person has that attached, then fine. You don't want him to eat the korban pesach. Abel ben necho delay mois, but the ben necho, after all, he doesn't have something disgusting attached to his body. He's acting wrongly. He's estranged from Hashem. He's given up on Torah and mitzvah, so on one particular mitzvah, whatever. But nevertheless, there's no actual disgusting thing. Ema loy, so you would think maybe not. Maybe he's allowed to eat the korban pesach, and therefore we need to be told that not. The e kosev rachmana kol ben necher. On the other hand, if the Torah only told us about the ben necher that he can't eat truma, you would say mishum de'en liba l'shamayim. You know why? Because his heart is not aligned with Hashem. Because we're saying that he gave up on Torah and mitzvahs. He converted to another religion, or he gave up one particular mitzvah and said it doesn't apply to me anymore. Avol oral de liba l'shamayim. But the oral, after all, again, we're not talking about an oral where he's not getting a bris milah because he denies that mitzvah applies to him. That would be a mumar. We're talking about either, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that he's not doing it because he doesn't want to go through the pain. And according to Rashi and everybody else, that, but also even when he's not doing it out of danger to his life. So whatever the case, his heart is aligned with Hashem. So Aval Oral Delibula Shemayim, Eim Alois, you would think an Oral whose heart is aligned with Hashem. So maybe there's no problem with him eating the Korban Pesach. Tzricha, and therefore we need to be told that neither of them can eat from the Korban Pesach. Okay. Which Tosfos points out, I mean, the fact is, we also said that we douse in the word boy from each of them, kor oro lo yoichel boy, saying that he eats matzah and maru, and kol ben necho lo yoichel boy, saying that he is allowed to eat maisu and he is allowed to eat truma. However, Tosfos says, the fact is, if it only said one of them and we were going to be able to learn the other one from it, then the Torah would have put the boys in other psukim. Instead, it put them in these psukim, showing that these psukim themselves are necessary, and now we understand why. Oral and ben necho, each one are in a category of their own, and you can't derive one from the other. Okay. Since we're talking about words by the Korban Pesach that are not needed for the pshat of the pasuk and what we're learning from them, so here's another one: mimenu, mimenu lomli. A few times by the Korban Pesach, it says the word mimenu. For example, it says al tochli mimenu no, and then further on you have other psukim by the Korban Pesach that also use the word mimenu. So, altisinu mimenu ad boker, vanosi mimenu. Altogether, in fact, you have three. So now the word mimenu also suggests a miut. It implies from it, you're not allowed to do such and such, but you're allowed to do such and such with something else. So what are we learning from those? And the answer is l'chid rabba omer Rabbi Yitzchak. We're learning from those what Rabba says in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, which we're going to have later on Daf Ayin Dalad, where he explains one of them is needed legufo to tell us that these dinim apply to the Korban Pesach itself. For example, the din that you have to eat it roasted, and the other two are used for the second one is used for Gzeira Shava, and the third one tells you that you have a lava nitik la'ese, that if you left over from the Korban Pesach, then you have a mitzvah to burn it. So we'll learn all that later on Daf Ayin Dalad, Bez Hashem. The point is, that's what we use the mimenus for. So they're not telling us a contrast between the Korban Pesach and something else, but rather they're used for different other limudim. Okay. Now, getting back to, we learned on Ayin Omud Beis, we had a braisa, on Ayin Omud Aleph, rather. We learned a braisa at the beginning of the Gemara. We said Rabbi Lozer or Rabbi Eliezer had learned the fact that an oro can't eat truma from this gzeira shava toshav v'sacher that we've been discussing all this time. Then we said Rabbi Akiva says you don't even need the gzeira shava when it says ish, then it means that it comes to include that an oro cannot eat truma. So now let's analyze that. Omar Rabbi Akiva, I mean it's sort of harayo ish l'rabas as a oro. Again, the question is ve'ema l'rabas sa'oinan. So now we can ask the same question on Rabbi Akiva as we did on Rabbi Eliezer. Given that we have a limud in the pasuk and we know it's excluding somebody, why are we saying it's excluding the oral? Maybe say that it excludes the oinan. Maybe say that an oinan is not allowed to eat truma. And the answer is Amar Rabbi Yisrael Chanina Amar Kro. Yes, but on the other hand, we have a ribuy in the pasuk where it says v'chol zor. It says that any zor is not allowed to eat truma. And like we said before, in Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, it means that a zor is not allowed to eat truma, implying but an oinan is. Again, the question is aim of aloya rebus. So maybe you could say that it means to exclude the oral. Again, just like we said before, you have a ribuy from one pasuk, a miyot from the other. Why are you assuming that the Torah is excluding the oral and including the oinan? Maybe the other way around. And again, the answer is, first of all, haksiv ish. Okay, so you can't say that it includes everything because you have the miut from the word ish. Baru mara isa. So now we have to figure out logically, why should we say that the ribui applies to one and the miut to the other, maybe the other way around. And the answer is, like we said before, mistabra arelos havele l'rabuye. It's more logical that we're going to include arelos, shekain, maisim krusim, the davar ha'eved, because we have the same simen as we had before on ayin omid beis, being an oral has many disadvantages compared to being an oinin. Number one, shekein maisa mechus in the name mechusa maiso maisa begufay. Number one, there's an actual maisa involving his own goof that's lacking. When it comes to the oinin, there's no maisa missing. Once the day is over, he won't be an oinin anymore. As opposed to here, he actually has an orla that needs to be removed from his own body. But onush kares, a person who fails to get a bris mila is chayev kares. The yeshne lifnad dibur, the whole concept of mila applied even before Matan Torah because it was given already to Avraham Avinu. The umila schora va'avod of ma'keves, and we find by the Korban Pesach that if a person doesn't have, that not only if he doesn't have bris milah, but we said even if the males in his family or his slaves don't have, his avodim knanim, that is, don't have a bris milah, then also that prevents him from eating the korban Pesach. So therefore, so you have a lot of reasons to say that if the Torah is telling you a miut, that if the Torah is telling you that something applies to truma as well, it's more logical to be an oral because it has so many factors involved with it. So the Gemara says, Adraba aninus havele l'rabuye. On the other hand, aninus has factors that arelus doesn't. Shekein yeshna b'chol shah, because first of all, it applies all the time, as opposed to bris milah, a person only has once in their lifetime, but a person could, Rachman al-Tzlan, be an onan again and again. V'nehegas b'anoshim v'noshim, and aninus applies equally to men and women, whereas milah, of course, only applies to men. V'ein b'yadu l'sakin atzmai, and a third thing with aninus is you don't have the capability of fixing it up yourself. A person who doesn't have a milah conceivably could get a milah. We talked about yesterday, okay, a person where it's dangerous for him to have a milah, maybe he can't actually right now have a milah, but eventually, in principle, he'll be able to. And even right now, if somebody were to do a bris milah for him, then the fact is it is effective, even if it does put his life in danger. So there certainly according to Rabbeinu Tam's shita, that we're talking that the oral to begin with is not somebody whose life is in danger, just somebody who doesn't want to undergo the pain. Then of course he has the ability at any time to be brave enough to say, you know what, I'm going to go through with it. So you see that aninus has several factors that make it more chomer than arelus. So again, why don't we say that if the pasuk is telling us that there's somebody who can't eat truma, then it would be the oinen rather than the oral. And again, the answer is, like the Gemara said before, hanach nefishan, the fact is that there are four advantages that arelus has over aninus, and three that aninus has over arelus, and therefore four is more than three, and therefore it's more logical that we're going to say that the word ish refers to the oral. Rava Omar, and again, like before, like when we said that before, we had another reason that the Gemara said, we had another reason, even if we don't look at the numeric majority, we had another reason to say that, we had Rava bringing a reason before to say that, that's more logical to include the oral rather than the oinen. So here also, Rava Amar, b'loy hanach nefishan nami le'matzes amret, even if you don't consider the fact that the four things of arelus are greater than the three of aninus, you have another reason to say that b'loy hanach nefishan, even without considering that one is more than the other. Nami le'matzes amret, you also can't say that conceivably the word ish could be excluding the oinen from eating truma and allowing the oral. Because after all, omakra ish. Where is Rabbi Akiva learning that the oral can't eat truma? He's learning from the words ish. And literally that means a man, meaning every man. Well, ezehu davash yeshne b'ish ve'ene b'isha. Which one do we know that applies only to men and not women? Heviyam is arelus. Necessarily it's arelus, because we just said aninus applies equally to both. So therefore, if the pasuk is phrasing it in terms of ish, necessarily that itself implies that according to Rabbi Akiva, that it's being memayit, something that applies exclusively to men, namely arelus. And then if we have another pasuk that tells us v'chol zor, implying on the other hand, a zor is barred from eating truma, but there's somebody else, or there's a certain other kind of person, a koyin, who is allowed to, then we're going to say that would be an oinah. Okay. So the question now is, Rabbi Akiva hai toshav v'socher mai ovidlei. Now, we said before, Rabbi Eliezer is using the word toshav v'socher by truma to teach us as one part of the gzeira shavah. And we said we have a gzeira shavah because his toshav v'socher can't eat korban Pesach, and toshav v'socher can't eat truma. We said by the korban Pesach, it doesn't really need to tell us toshav v'socher because we know that the toshav v'socher means an eved ivri. The fact is actually that by the korban Pesach, an eved ivri can eat from it, because after all, he's a full-fledged yid. So therefore we said we don't really need those words by the korban Pesach, and therefore since we had also the other end of the gzeira shavah was by truma, and therefore we said that's where we learned that an oral can't eat truma. Now according to Rabbi Akiva, we're saying we're not doing that gzeira shavah. So according to him, what are we doing with the words toshav v'socher when it comes to truma? So the answer is Amar Rav Shmaya las, or for that matter by the korban Pesach. So what are we doing with those words? The answer is Amar Rav Shmaya la'asuye arvi mohol to give oni mohol or gavnuni, it says on the side. It comes to include that not only that that uh, that not only a goy can't eat the korban pesach, which is more obvious because it says v'chol oro lo yechavoy, but even if the person physically has a bris milah, he's an Arab or he's a givoni, which is Rashi describes the name of a nation that does bris milah. So we're not talking about the pashtus, the classical givonim, the descendants of the people who tricked Yeshua and the Jewish people into accepting them because they were actually gay. We're going to learn about them later on in our parak. So the pashtus, they would be chayev in they'd be chayev in korban pesach just like any other gerim, or at least just like any other avodim. What we mean is there was some other nation at that time, so gavoni or gavnuni, it says on the side over here, where they regularly practiced bris milah. We talked about them earlier in the masechta, actually, the possibility that maybe they are the descendants of keturah. So you have where the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that Bnei Keturah are Chayev and Bris Milah. It's Macholikus between the Rambam and other Rishonim, Rashi, for example, holds over there that it means just the original six children of Keturah are Chayev and Bris Milah, not their descendants. The Rambam learns that it means their descendants as well. So according to him, the Gavnuni over here could be Bnei Keturah. Anyway, whatever it is, so they and the Arabs physically have Bris Milah. From the pasuk kol oro lo yechavoy, you wouldn't know then that you can't give them korban pesach. Therefore, you have according to Rabbi Akiva, you're learning from the word toshiv v'sacher that you can't. So the Gemara says, "V'hani mula ninu." So you're telling me that such people are considered in halacha to have a milah. So physically, obviously, they do. But are you telling me that changes their status in halacha such that you would need a pasuk to tell us that you can't give them korban pesach? Well, tanan, we learn in a mishnah in Nedarim. If a person makes a neder that I'm not going to have hana from arelim, from anybody who is uncircumcised, mutar ba'arle Yisrael, he's allowed to have hana from Jews who do not have a bris milah, because even though physically they don't have a bris milah, they're considered as though they did, as the Mishnah goes on to say over there. But also b'mulay b'kachavim, vice versa, though he'd be also to have hana from any goyim, even if they do physically have a milah. And vice versa, koinam shani nen lamulan. If he makes a neder, koinam is another word for korban. So it means that he's saying such and such food should be also to me if I do as if it was a korban. If I do such and such, so vice versa, koinam shani nen lamulan. If he makes a koinam neder that I'm not going to have hana from mulin, from people who have a milah, then vice versa, mutar b'mulay avdi k'chavim, he's still allowed to have hana from goyim or circumcised, so he'd be allowed to have hana from Arabs, for example, but also b'arle Yisrael, but he's also to have hana from Jews who are uncircumcised, because the Mishnah goes on to say that Jews are called mulim regardless whether they physically have a milah or not, and goyim are considered arelim regardless whether they have a milah or not. Rashi points out that by Nedarim we have a rule, holach acha loshen b'nei adam. We go according to the common language of people, and Yisraelim, Jews, are never called Arelim, and Goyim are never called Mulim. In fact, it used to be, you always have to have, when we live among the Goyim, we have to have some in-group term that we can use to call them, that they're not going to catch on, that we're talking about them. So a very common one that they used to back in the old country, they used to sometimes use the word oral for that purpose. So the word oral means a goy regardless, and it doesn't mean even a goy who physically has a milah. Okay, Tosfos says that the fact is, so what does that have to do with you when we're talking about the dinim of korban pesach? But okay, because the fact is, the Mishnah goes on to say, not just Loshen Bnei Adam, the Mishnah goes on to bring a pasuk that expresses this idea that all the goyim are called arelim, and therefore we can say that yes, that applies to the korban pesach as well. So again, the question then is that given that the goyim are called arelim in halacha regardless, then the fact that they have a bris milah is neither here nor there. So why would we need a pasuk according to Rabbi Akiva to tell us that you can't give from the korban pesach to eat to an arvi mohol or gavnuni or givoni mohol if anyway they're not considered gemalot in halacha? So Ella, you're right. La'asuya ger shemovloi tovel v'kotn shenolad shuhu mohol. Rather, we can say that the word that the toshav v'sacher according to Rabbi Akiva comes to include that you also can't give korban pesach to a ger who's in the process of gerus, who had a milah but has not yet toiveled, and also you can't give it to a child who was born already gemalot, Because Rabbi Akiva holds about such a child that you still need to do a tofes dambris, even if the child is born without an orla, you still need to drop blood from that area. So therefore, according to him, until that's done, the child is still considered an oral. He physically doesn't have an orla, doesn't matter. Until a tofes dambris is done, he's also not considered gemalot. And then as far as the goy, the fact that he has a milah, but he hasn't yet done tefillah. The fact is, he's still a goy, and therefore the word Tosha Basacher tells us that you can't give him korban Pesach. Rishonim discuss, I mean, the fact is, didn't we learn earlier in the Masechta, when we learned the dinim of Geirus, we said that, in fact, if he doesn't do Mila and tefillah, then he's not a Geir. So in that case, why do we even need a posik to include him? As long as he's a goy, then we just said all goyim are considered arelim, even if they're physically circumcised. So Tosfos and Tosfos Yishonim actually discussed that earlier in the Masechta and say that in fact that might be precisely from here, maybe where we're learning that concept. There we learned in that Sugya, we talked about that maybe we learn from Matan Torah, where they had to have not only Mila but also Tvila. But instead, we could say that maybe Rabbi Eliezer, maybe Rabbi Akiva, at least is learning from here, from this very thing about the Korban Pesach, that only once he has tefillah is he a full-fledged Jew, and therefore we learn from here to everything else that until then he's not considered a Jew. Different other Rishonim talk about different possibilities. The Rashba and the Ritva talk about each in somewhat different osius, that once the Mila is done, then he doesn't have the tumah of the goyim anymore. He doesn't have the kedusha of a yid yet. You have two stages in geirus, mila and tvila. One takes him out of the tumah of a goy, and the other one brings him into the kedusha of a yid. So, but at least once he's had the mila, he is out of the tumah of the goy. You can't necessarily say that he's in the category of kol agoyim arelim that we just said, and therefore we'd need, according to Rabbi Akiva, we'd need a posuk to exclude him. That the fact is, he still can't eat from the korban pesach. Anyway, Rabbi Eliezer the time made. Meanwhile, Rabbi Eliezer is going according to his shita, where he says, I don't need a posik to exclude them, because in fact, he says, Da'ama ger shamov lo tovo ger mal yahu. In fact, he learns, as we said in the sugya earlier on Daf Mem Vav, that if he only had Mila and not Tvila, he is a full-fledged ger. According to him, you don't need both in order to become a ger. Well, very good. According to him, then, you don't need the word Tosha V'sachir to tell us that a ger who has only Mila cannot eat from the Korban Pesach, because according to him, he could eat from the Korban Pesach. And if he doesn't have a bris Mila, then you don't need that pasuk, because already it says, Kol Oral Lo Yoichal Bo, and as long as he doesn't have a Mila, he's an Oral. And the Kasavar, and furthermore, Rabbi Eliezer also holds, Kotten Kshenolad Mohu, that if a child was born Gemalot, he was born without an Orla, Ein Sorach La'atif Menu Dambris, you do not need to do a Tofes Dambris, says Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer would say, I don't need the word Tosha Basacher to teach us about either one of those, because in fact, both of them are fully able to eat from the Korban Pesach. The cotton, because he doesn't have an orla, I didn't have do a tofes dambris, Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't require that. And the ger, he hasn't done tvila, Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't care. He's still a full-fledged ger. So therefore, so the fact that Rabbi Akiva needs a posuk for them is because of Rabbi Akiva's shita about those two things. He holds that the ger needs tevila, and until then, he doesn't have the kedusha of a yid, and he holds that the child needs a tofes dambris. So according to him, you need psukim to tell us that in that in between stage before the tevila or before the tofes dambris, that you should need to that he's still barred from eating the korban pesach. For that, Rabbi Akiva needs psukim. Rabbi Eliezer does not. Now we said now so that explains then. So in short, Rabbi Eliezer is using the Tosha Basachir to teach us the Gzeira Shava about an oral not being able to eat truma. And meanwhile, Rabbi Akiva is saying that I'm using those words Tosha Basachir to teach us about these in-between cases, the goy who has done Mila but not Tvila, and the Ger who's done Mila but not Tvila, and the Kotten who was born Gemalot and hasn't yet had a Tofes Dambris. Now, we said Rabbi Akiva is learning from the word ish-ish. He's learning the fact that an oral can't eat truma from the word ish-ish, which it says by truma. So, Rabbi Eliezer, hi, ish-ish my overlay. What does Rabbi Eliezer do with those words in the pasuk? He says, we don't douse in anything from them. Dibra Torah Koloshin Me'adam. The Torah speaks in common human language. It's the normal way to say every person in Tanakh Hebrew is ish-ish, and therefore that's what the pasuk says over here. It means every person, and the pasuk goes on to say when he has tzaras or ziva or any kind of tumah, then he can't eat tumah. It's not meant, according to Rabbi Eliezer, to douch in anything specific from it. Okay, So that takes care of how Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, now how Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva would understand each other's psukim. Now that we went through that, so now we established then that either way we have a limud that says that a cut that we, that says that an oral cannot eat truma. So now, boy of Choma ba'ukva, cotton oral. What if you have a baby who's under 8 days old, and therefore he hasn't had a mila yet? Would you be allowed to smear his skin with oil of truma? The question is, right now he's an oral, but it's shaloi bizmana because before the eighth day and you can't do the bris mila yet. Is that ma'akiv from eating truma? So okay, he's a baby, he can't yet eat truma, but smearing it on his skin is kind of the equivalent of eating it. Rashi points out we have in various places in Shas where it says that smearing something on your skin is the equivalent of drinking it in halacha. So the question is, now he is an oral, but he's an oral before the time, during the 8 days, before the 8 days. So therefore, you're allowed to smear it on his skin or not. The fact that he's an oral, but it's before the time, is that ma'ak of him from eating or from using truma or not? So Amar Rav Zeira Toshma, so Rav Zeira says, we can prove it from the following. We learn in a Braisa, Ainly ela mila schorav b'shasa siya va'avodav b'shasa chila. Now, by the Korban Pesach, it says, if a person has boys who have not yet had the bris mila, then it says he has to first make them a bris mila, and then it says va'oz yikrav la'asoysay. Then he can come close to do the Korban Pesach, which means, in other words, to shecht it. So in other words, the Pesach is telling us that if he has sons who do not yet have a mila, then he cannot shech the Korban Pesach. Now, a few psukim earlier by the Avodim, it says that if he has an eved, b'chol eved ish miknas kosef, but if he has an eved who was bought with money, umalta oisa, you have to make him a mila, oz yoichal boy, then you can eat of it. Now, the yoichal boy doesn't refer to the eved, because of course we know if he's an oral, he can't eat. It means that the master can't eat truma until he makes sure that his Avodim have a mila. So now that implies, so there it's talking about eating. So now, in other words, so ainli ela mila schora v'shasasiya. So from the psukim so far, you would only know that if he has an uncircumcised son at the time of shecht in the Korban Pesach, then he can't shecht it. Va'avoda v'shasachila. And we would know from the psukim that if he has an eved who does not have a mila, then he can't eat the Korban Pesach. Minayim litanas omer shal zebezevas omer shal zebezev. How do we know that it applies across each other either? Let's say, in other words, by the Eved, for example, it would mean that when it says by the Eved that it bars him from eating the Korban Pesach, so the implication would be that let's say he shechted the Korban Pesach, and then afterwards he bought an Eved and did not yet do a bris milah for him, then he would not be able to eat the Korban Pesach. But it sounds from the psukim, from the pshat of the psukim, that there would be no problem with him shechting the Korban Pesach. There's only a problem with him eating it. So how do we know that that's not so? And in fact, having an uncircumcised son or eved prevents him from either shechting or eating the Korban Pesach. Tamad Lema, oz, the gzeira shav. So therefore, the Braisa says you have a word oz that it says by both of them, oz yikrav la'asoysay, and oz yoichaboy teaches us litana, so it's a gzeira shav, and it means that therefore it applies to both. So if he has a son who's not gemalit, then he can't shech the Korban Pesach and he can't eat it. And similarly, if he has an Eved who doesn't have a Mila, then he can't shecht it or he can't eat it. Now, the implication is, Reb Zeira is going to say, that it's possible for the status of these things to change between the Shechita and the Achila. So, Bishlema Avodov, so as far as slaves, Mashkachasla, the Isnu Vishas Achila, the Lesnu Vishas Asiya, it's easy enough to find a case of Avodim where you have them at the time of eating, but not at the time of shecht and Korban Pesach, going to Zabninu, Beni Beni, exactly that. You bought an Eved in between. You shechted your Korban Pesach, then you bought an Eved later on Erev Pesach afternoon, and now comes Pesach night, and you haven't yet done a Mamila, and the Torah is telling us, even though when you shechted the Korban Pesach, that was fine, but you can't eat from this Korban Pesach because you have an uncircumcised slave. El Zchorov, but how would you have the example which the Braisa is implying that you could have of sons where you have them at the time of Achila when it comes to eat the Korban Pesach, but you didn't have them a few hours earlier, the less no b'shas asiya, but you didn't have them a few hours earlier when you were shechting the Korban Pesach. Hey, chimeshkachas, what would be the scenario? Lav de isyal would be nasiya la'achila. Evidently, the case would have to be where the baby was born on Erev Pesach afternoon, after you shechted, before you ate it. So that would show that, yes, even though the baby is not having a bris milah yet because you can't do the bris milah until a week later, nevertheless, it sounds like the braisa is implying that would be enough to bar the father from eating the Korban Pesach. So there you go then, in that case, says Reb Zeira. So you see from that braisa, by the same token, you can't, given that we said that arelo supplies equally well to the Korban Pesach and the truma, then the answer would be, says Reb Zeira, yes, you can't take oil of truma and smear it on a baby less than 8 days old. Omar Rava, but Rava says, on the side over here, it says Rabba, the Tisbara. How do you think, Reb Zeira, that such a svara is valid? Hima loy kol zacha omar rachmana. After all, the pasuk says, make a milah for every male. And then the pasuk continues, v'oz yikra v'asoy. So then you can come close and do the Korban Pesach, meaning shechet, v'hai lav v'amihilahu. The fact is, here you can't do a milah. In other words, the Torah is implying only that when you have the possibility of doing a milah, then if you don't do it, then you can't eat the Korban Pesach as long as that milah is not done. But if the baby is below 8 days old, you can't do the milah anyway. Anyway, so the Torah can't possibly be saying that you can't possibly say that that it would mean that if the baby was under 8 days old, you can't eat the Korban Pesach. That's not what the pasuk is implying with the words hima lo kol zacha. Ella, rather, Rava says, "Hach ma'askinan k'gan shachal satu chama." I can give you a case where a baby was not able to have a bris milah earlier in the day, but now, when it comes time for the seder, you're saying that he would have been able to have a bris milah. K'gan shachal satu chama. For example, the baby had a fever, and now the fever went away. Chama means heat, so it means a fever. Chaltsatu literally means that it was removed from him, like chalitza. So therefore, it means that the fever went away. So now, as long as he had a fever, you couldn't make him a bris milah. Now that it's gone, then you could. Okay, so the Gemara says, so what? V'nesiv lei kol shiva. Okay, so the fact is, you should give him 7 days. Because after all, Shmuel says in the Gemara in Shabbos, the 19th parak of Shabbos deals with the dinim of bris milah in detail, and it says over there that if the baby was sick with a fever, for example, then once the baby recovers, not obviously you can't do the milah while the baby is sick, but even after the baby recovers, you need to wait 7 days. And the answer is okay, diabinin like kol shiva. Okay, so that's the answer. In other words, so we're talking about, you already gave the 7 days. Now, the 7 days have passed, and now comes Erev Pesach. So now the pasuk is telling you because your baby is now able to have a bris milah, and yet you're not doing that, then until hima like kol zacha, until you do that bris milah, then you can't come close, and you can't bring the Korban Pesach. So Gemara says, okay, fine, but if you need 7 days, so do the bris milah in the morning. In other words, the implication before was from the braisa, we said that you could have a case where the baby was not yet able to have a milah at the time of asiya, at the time of shecht in the Korban Pesach, which is Erev Pesach afternoon, but then by the time it comes the time of achila, which is that night, then already he's able to have a milah. If we have to give him 7 days, then the 7 days b'pashtos are over in the morning. So comes Erev Pesach morning, you could already do a bris milah. If you don't, then you can't shecht the Korban Pesach either. You don't need a ribui in the pasuk to tell you that you can't eat it because you already can't shecht it. The answer is no. But in mes less, because you have to have the 7 days have to be 7 times 24 hours. So in other words, if the baby's fever broke on Zion Nissen in the afternoon, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, let's say, then you have to wait until Yud Dalad Nissen at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And only then is he fit to have a bris milah. So there you have a case. So now you could have, let's say, the time of Shechting, the Korban Pesach begins a half hour after Chatzos. Okay, normally they would do it later as we learned from Masechta Pesachim, but still, whatever. So 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whatever time you want to make up. Point is that you have to wait until then. So you could have a case where the baby is not able to have a milah earlier in the afternoon, but he's able to later in the afternoon. The Gemara says that doesn't work. But Hatoni Luda, didn't Luda teach a braisa? Luda is the name of the Chacham. Yom Havra Osek Yom Hivaldo. The day when he recovers is like the day on which he was born. Now, my lab, meaning, in other words, that you have to wait for, meaning now, the Pashtus, Ludah means, in other words, that they're the same day of the week. In other words, because since you have to wait seven, you have to wait 7 days. So if the baby recovers, let's say on a Tuesday, then the bris is able to be done the following Tuesday. But doesn't that mean my love, ma yom hivoldo lebin in mesles? Now, the day the baby was born doesn't have to be mesles. The baby is born sometime on Tuesday, as long as it's any time during the day, then that counts as his first day. After yom have also lebin in mesles. It sounds like the day that he recovers also doesn't have to be mesles. It sounds like as soon as the following week, Tuesday, comes, then you can do the bris milah. The Gemara says, loy, that's not what luda means. When he says yom avra osik yom hivoldo, he just means it has to be the same day of the week. But in fact, odif yom avra osim yom hivoldo. In fact, the day that he recovers has to be stronger than the day he was born. The ilu yom hivoldo labor in mess less on the day, for when it comes to the day he was born, you don't need mess less. Meaning, even if a baby is born on a Tuesday afternoon late in the day, then you still say the following week, Tuesday morning, you can do the bris, even though it's not full 7 times 24 hours yet from when he was born. But the idu yom avra also been in mass less. But when he recovers, then you do need mass less. If the baby recovers at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, then you have to wait till 4 o'clock in the afternoon the following Tuesday to make him the milah. So when Luda says yom avra also kiyem ivoldo, what he's saying is, in both cases, you have to wait till the following corresponding day of the week. The baby was born on Tuesday, then the milah is next Tuesday. The baby recovers on Tuesday, then the milah is next Tuesday. But the difference is that in the case of Yom Hivoldo, you don't have to wait until the same time of the day, but in the case of Yom Havra also you do. Therefore, we come out with, says Rava or Rabba, that in fact you do have a case where the baby was not able to have a milah earlier in the day on Erev Pesach, but he's able to later in the day. So now, let's say, in other words, so the baby was sick. Let's say he had recovered on Zion Nissen at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Meanwhile, comes Erev Pesach a week later at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You go and shecht your korban Pesach. So you shechted it, no problem. You didn't have yet a child who's able to have a milah. But now, by the time it comes to eating the Korban Pesach later in the day, you're going to have, it's already going to be more than 7 times 24 hours since the baby recovered. Therefore, the Pasuk is telling you better make him a bris milah. Otherwise, even though you shechted the Korban Pesach validly, you're not going to be able to eat it. Okay, so that's one answer. Rapapa amaka going to koiv like ain't the yinuka vi itrach beni ubeni. Rapapa gives a different answer. Let's say the baby had had an eye ache and he recovered. Now, the rule about the 7 days only applies to something that affects the baby's whole body. Then we say you have to wait 7 times 24 hours after he recovered. But if it was something that affects only one organ of the body, for example, he had sore eyes, then you don't have to wait the 7 days. Then just as soon as the baby recovers, you can do the milah. Well, there you go then. So you can have the baby had an eye ache. He recovered on Erev Pesach afternoon. And now, again, you have the same thing, where at the time of the shecht and the Korban Pesach, he was still sick. And by the time you come to eat the Korban Pesach, he's better. By the way, in halacha, you have, for example, all of this is accepted, the halacha. And, for example, you have, let's say, when nowadays, you have sometimes babies are jaundiced. Most of the time, the jaundice is not so much showing that that's an underlying sickness, just that their liver is not mature enough yet to be able to handle the baby's blood. And therefore, as soon as the baby recovers, then you can do the milah. Only when you have, so you have sometimes when the jaundice is not the result of that, but rather the result of something more serious, then you have to wait 7 times 24 hours. And similarly with other things, there are various things. Sometimes you have to wait the 7 days, sometimes not. This is why you discuss it with the moyel. This is why you discuss it with the moyel, and he has the expertise to know one versus the other. Anyway, Rava gives a third answer. Here's another case. Let's say the father and the mother were in jail on Erev Pesach afternoon. Now, the mitzvah of milah is primarily on them, so they can't do it. So now they sent somebody to shecht the Korban Pesach on their behalf. But now if they're out of jail before Pesach begins, then they still have to do the bris milah for their son. And if not, then they can't eat from that Korban Pesach. So that would be another example where you have where the shchita was done validly, but the achila you still have, but they have a child who's an oral. An interesting point is that Rashi mentions the line over here. He says that the Gemara actually says that the father and mother were in jail, and Rashi says the Lashon that the mitzvah of milah is on them. An interesting point of that is that the Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that really the mitzvah of milah is only on the father, not on the mother. So why are we even mentioning the mother over here? So Rishonim, the Urzarua, and a couple of other Rishonim deal with that question, and Marsha over here on the Gemara also does. There's a few different answers. Among them are, you're right, maybe the Gemara didn't need to mention the mother and it only mentions her derech agav. Or there's also an answer that in fact, even if it's true that if the mother doesn't have the chiyuv of bris milah, but practically speaking, if the father is in jail, the mother would be arranging it. So only because both of them are in jail is it not getting done. And then there's a couple of other answers. Rabbi Yaakov Emden gives an answer that, both of them have a role to play. The father has the mitzvah of arranging for the moil. The mother, practically speaking, takes care of the baby after the milah. So if you don't have the mother available, then it's very likely that the milah is not going to happen. And then the Marsha himself says that actually maybe the implication is here that even though the mother does not have a mitzvah of bris milah, nevertheless, if she has a son who does not have a bris milah, then she still is barred from eating the Korban Pesach because of that. So even though the father, there's no question, would be because he has the mitzvah of milah. The chiddush is of the Marsha is that even the mother, even though she does not have that mitzvah, nevertheless, the fact that she has a son who doesn't have a bris milah prevents her from eating the Korban Pesach. Anyway, so that's another possible answer of how you can have that the shchita, that at the time of the shchita, everything was okay, but afterwards, but at the time of achila, then there's a problem, namely, again, where they were in jail at the time of the shchita, and they sent somebody to do the shchita on their behalf, and now, by the time of achila, they're out of jail, and we're saying, because they haven't done a milah for their son, then therefore they can't eat from the Korban Pesach. Okay, fourth answer, the Gemara says, Rav Kahana breder v'nechem yoma, g'gon tumtum shenikra v'nimtza zocho beni ubeni. Suppose you have the baby who was born as a tumtum, which is where there's something covering his genitals, so you can't tell whether it's a boy or a girl. And then sometime on Erev Pesach afternoon, after the shchita, before the eating of the Korban Pesach, an operation was done and they removed that skin and found that it's a boy. Well, now he needs a bris milah. So therefore, so again, you could have that at the time of shchita, they didn't yet have that done. So therefore, they couldn't do a bris milah, and now they're able to. Rav Shrevya Omar, and then a fifth answer, Rav Shrevya says that you could have a case where the baby is able to be, where the baby was not yet ready to have a milah at the time of shchita of the Korban Pesach, but he is able to by the time of eating the Korban Pesach. Here's another case, Rav Shrevya says, suppose that the baby was still in the womb, he stuck his head outside of the birth canal, where as soon as that happens, he's considered born. But now the labor has taken a very long time. The baby's head is out, but the rest of his body is still in, and 7 days have passed, and already therefore you have. So now, but the fact is, at the beginning of the, and so now comes Erev Pesach, and he's still not completely out, so you can't do the milah. Then later in the day, he finally comes out completely, and now you can make him a milah. Because he is 8 days old already, because again, we count his birth as being when his head came out. The Gemara says, Michaye, would the baby even be able to live in that condition for so long? V'hotanya, we learn in a braisa, there's a braisa in Masech the Nida, in Masech Nida, you have the famous description of how a baby is in the womb, and it says over there, "Kivin sheyotze la'avara olam." As soon as the baby comes out, the Braisa describes over there how the baby is inside the mother's womb. The position he's in, and then it says over there that his mouth is closed because he's not yet eating and drinking, but his navel is open because the umbilical cord is bringing him nutrients. And Vatanya, we learn in the Braisa over there, "Kivin sheyotze la'avara olam." Once the baby comes out into the world, what was closed, his mouth opens up. What was open, his navel closes up. Shilmolikain, and if it weren't for that, if things stayed open or closed when they weren't Ein Yochel Lichias Afilu Sha'achas, then the baby wouldn't even be able to live for a short time. This is what we mean, by the way, when we say in Asher Yotzer, Golav Yadur Lishem Yisaseim Echad Mehem Ayim Epesech Echad Mehem Yif Shali Iskayim Afilu Sha'achas, it includes this point that as soon as the baby is born, everything closes and opens as it's supposed to. So in other words, how could the baby possibly survive with its head outside and the rest of its body inside? As soon as it's born, as soon as the head is out, then the navel is going to close up. So then, how is he? And we're saying he's not going to be able to live, because how is he going to be able to nurse? An interesting side point, by the way, in this, the Gemara is quoting this as Vahatanya. Now, in the side of it here, it points out that maybe really instead of the word v'hatanya, maybe it should say v'ha'itmar, because in fact, in Nida, when it brings this whole thing, it doesn't say over there v'raisa, it says Reb Simloi Oim. Now, the interesting point is, part of that v'raisa is the line that's at the beginning of Tanya, Mashbir Noisi, Ti Tzadik, Baal Ti Yerusha. Now, the Alter Rebbe does not begin Tanya by saying Omer Reb Simloi, Mashbir Noisi, but rather he begins by saying Tanya, That means that the Alter Rebbe was following the fact that it says in our Gemara that it calls it Vahatanya, implying that it's a Braisa, and therefore the Alter Rebbe quotes it like that as a Braisa, even though our Gemara they would need to say Omer Reb Simloi. Where you have the famous explanation about it. So why did the Alter Rebbe choose that? It seems like a very unusual girsa. And there's the idea because the Alter Rebbe wanted to begin with the word Tanya because it's Osius Eson, so it represents the strong internal power of the neshama, and also there's a klipa called Tanya which the Alter Rebbe wanted to which particularly affects Tamei Chachamim, which the Alter Rebbe wanted to dispose of. So therefore, that's why he picked the Tanya. But the fact what justifies him using the word Tanya is our Gemara over here, which quotes a different part of that, statement as a Braisa. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here, the question again is that if the baby is only partially born, he's not getting nutrients from the umbilical cord anymore because that closes up. On the other hand, he can't nurse because he's not completely out. So how is he going to live for a week? The answer is Hocha Ma'askin Dezanse Ishsa. The answer is he's being fed by a fever. Something you have when a person has a fever, then they don't feel the desire to eat, like they live off their body's fat. Whose fever are we talking about? Do we mean the baby is born having a fever? Well, then, like we said before, you're going to need full 7 days once he recovers from that. So anyway, you're still not going to be, so even if he does come out completely on the eighth day, you still can't make him a bris milah because you have to now wait another 7 days until the fever went away. So rather, the answer is that his mother had a fever, and therefore, so that keeps him going, even if for a few days over there, he's not able to nurse. But the fact is that his mother is still partially in her body and she has a fever. And therefore, that has a certain effect on him as well. So he's not sick, but nevertheless, he's still able to live off his body reserves like that. And therefore, it's conceivable that now eventually that he finally comes out on the eighth day and they're able to do the milah right away. Or another answer you could say, all of this that we said, that the baby can't live for that long, is talking about where he's not crying. But if he's crying, then in fact he will be able to live. Then in other words, apparently the implication is that in that case, the umbilical cord is still open and then he's still able to get nourishment from it. Tosfos brings a different girsa, not ma'avi, but ma'ura. Ma'ura means attached. So if the umbilical cord is actually still attached to the mother, well, then he's still getting nutrients through that. When we say nistama pasuach, when we say niftach hasosim, nistama pasuach, we mean that when the baby is born and the umbilical cord is cut, then the navel closes up right away, so nothing comes out of there, but nothing goes in and out of there. But as long as the body is still inside the womb and the umbilical cord is still attached, then yes, he could still continue getting nutrients from that and therefore be able to live for a week in that condition. Okay. So that's that. So we have five different answers of how it's possible that a baby could be unavailable for Mila at the beginning of, on earlier in the afternoon, on Erev Pesach, but available for Mila later in the afternoon. And therefore, that's what the Pasuk is telling us, that both the Shechita and the Achila, you have to have, of the Korban Pesach, you have to have that all your children are Gemalot. And if you have a case where there's a child who, one of these things happen, and in between now, therefore, it comes the time of Achilas Pesach, and you haven't done the Mila, then you can't eat the Korban Pesach. But therefore, to answer our original question, therefore, so in the case where the baby is under 8 days old, then the Gemara didn't actually resolve the question, but the implication is, and this is how it's pasuk in the halacha, that the baby below 8 days old is in fact not considered an oral, and therefore you would be allowed to use the oil of Truma on him. Okay, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbanan, oral makabel hazar. Even a person who's an oral, who doesn't have a bris mila, he can be sprinkled with paraduma water to make him tar. So in other words, like this, as long as he's an oral, he can't eat korbanos. But the point is that if he's tahor from Tumas Nes, as soon as he has the bris mila, he'll be able to eat kodshim. We don't say that he's still going to need hazar afterwards. Shekein matzinu ba'avastinu shekibol hazar chain areidim. We find our ancestors when they came into Eretz Yisrael. With Yoshua, when they crossed the Jordan and came into Eretz Yisrael, then they were able to receive Hazar, they were able to be sprinkled with paradum or water, even though they were Arab. Shenema, the Pasuk says, they came up from the Jordan after having crossed it, on the 10th of the first month, on Yud Nisan. Now, Ba'asara Lo Mehili, now they didn't yet do the Mila on the 10th day itself, Mishum Chosha De'urfa, because they were weak from the journey, so when did they do the Bris Mila? The next day, the pastors. Therefore, Hazar Amos Ovid Lahu. Now they would have had to do Hazar in order to be Tahar to bring the Korban Pesach. And we know the Hazar has to be done on Shlishi and Shvi on the third day and on the seventh day. So if we work backwards, the seventh day, the latest it could be is Yudalib Nisan, because obviously otherwise they can't bring the Korban Pesach at all. Therefore, working backwards, the third day would have had to be no later than the 10th of Nisan. But we're saying on the 10th of Nisan, they were still Arelim. Because the Pasuk goes on to describe that only after they came into Eretz Yisrael did Yoshua arrange a mass bris milah for them. So Hazar Emes Avid Lahu, so when would they have had to do the Hazar? Lav Chein Arelim, necessarily when they were Arelim. In fact, the Rambam has a shita that the person who was sprinkled with paradumal water on the seventh day, he still can't bring his Korban Pesach the next day. The Rambam learned the latest he can have the second sprinkling is your Gimel Nisan in order to bring the Korban Pesach. So according to the Rambam, all the more so, the second sprinkling would have had to be on your Gimel Nisan. The first sprinkling, therefore, would have had to be on Tes Nisan, which is before they even crossed the Yarden. So therefore, so you see that they were able to be sprinkled with paradumal water, even though they were Arelim. Says, why is that a proof? The Dumala over the Pesach Klal. Maybe they didn't make a Korban Pesach that year. Where are you getting that necessarily they did? Says, you can't think that. The Pesukim afterwards described that a few days later they made the Korban Pesach. So they did. Okay, okay, but how do you know? The fact is, we know that if the tzibur is tomei, they can still bring the Korban Pesach. Maybe that was this case over here. Maybe they were all tomei because they couldn't get Hazar being Arelim, and they still brought the Korban Pesach anyway. Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi answers, Mazutra, no, Tanya Behedya. We learn clearly in a Braisa, Molu v'Tovlu v'Osu v'Schein v'Tara, they made a Mila and a Tvila, and they made the Korban Pesach v'Tara. So yes, they did it. They were in fact Tahar. And therefore, if we see that they in order to be Mataho, then they had to sprinkle them with Paradoma water. Now, the Psukim before that, the Psukim at the beginning of Parakeh of Yoshua, describe how Yoshua had to arrange a massive Bris Mila for them because they didn't do Bris Mila in the desert, as we'll discuss tomorrow, Bess Hashem. So necessarily that shows that they had the Hazar, they had the Paradoma water sprinkled on them, even though they were still Arik. So that shows that you can do that. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav by Yitzchak Amar Rav Lo Nitna Prias Mila LaAvram Avinu. Now we know that Mila consists of two stages. You have Mila itself, which is cutting the Orla off, and then you have Priya, which is underneath the Orla. You have a thin membrane that has to be torn open. So Rav by Yitzchak is saying, in the name of Rav, that part of Mila was not given to Avram Avinu. only the Mila. Now, Tosfos says, the fact is we know Avraham kept the whole Torah before it was given, so Avraham did do Priya, even though he wasn't Nitzdapa. But how do we know that? Hashem tells Yeshua to make sharp knives and make a second Mila for the Jewish people. So the second Mila implies that the second Mila implies that they have to do Priya, because up until now they had only done Mila. So the Gemara says, why? What do you mean? Maybe the Pasuk is just talking about that Yeshua has to make a Mila for all those who didn't have a Mila in the desert, all the ones who were born in the desert. As the Pasuk in fact describes, all the men who had left Mitzrayim had a bris milah, because they had before they left Mitzrayim. But all the men who were born, all the boys who were born in the desert had not had a milah, which we'll learn tomorrow why indeed they didn't. So maybe that's what the pasuk means when it tells Yeshua to shuv moilus bnei Yisrael shenis. Maybe it just means that. Arrange a second mass bris milah. Who says it has anything to do with Priya? The answer is, imkein mai shuv. Then why would the pasuk say shuv moilus bnei Yisrael shenis? That implies that you're doing a second thing to them which hadn't been done before. Ela lav lepriya. So obviously that must mean even the ones who had mila before, they still need a second thing done, namely Priya. Umay shenis. So then why does the pasuk say shenis, which implies, and if you're saying that the word shuv, if you're doubting the word shuv, then what do we need the word shenis for? Or Rashi says a second explanation is that that shuv implies that you're doing something to them again, but shenis implies that you're doing a second time for the Jewish people. So what is it? So lakushi soif mila tchilas mila. It comes to make a hekesh between the end of mila and the beginning. Ma tchilas mila ma keves af soif mila ma akim. It means that the entire process of mila is ma'akiv, both the beginning and the end. Ditnan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in Shabbos, Elohein sits in a ma'akvinis amila. What shreds of flesh prevent the mila from being valid? Basar achoifes roiv ha'atorah. Any flesh that covers the most of the height of the atorah, so the atorah is the corona and the glands, the end of the aver that we talked about before. So if you have flesh that covers the majority of the height of it, even if it's not the majority of the circumference of it, then that's still considered to be it's not a complete mila. The ein ocha b'truma, and a person who has an incomplete mila like that cannot eat truma, because we said before an oral can't eat truma. And Omer Ravina, the Itamer of Yumi Ba'aba Omer Rab, Bosra Choyfes, Roiv Goivha Shalatora. It means that all you need is you have a piece of flesh that covers most of the height, not only most of the circumference, but also most of the height of the Atara. So therefore, in other words, so the point is, when a person is doing a bris mila, if he leaves behind a shred of skin like that, the mila is not valid, and he has to go back and fix that. So therefore, by saying the word shenis, the Pasuk is implying that you need to do that. You have to remove all those shreds that prevent the mila from being valid. And it means, in other words, that also it includes that you need to do the priya. So Tosfos discusses over here how exactly we learn that. We're saying that Avraham was told to take away these tzitzin, but nevertheless, the pasuk is by Yeshua is telling us that there's something new. Not only do you have to remove the tzitzin, which we see from the word shenis, but also that you have to do priya. So the Gemara is saying over here that Avraham wasn't commanded in Priya, but nevertheless we're saying he still did it just like he did other mitzvahs voluntarily. There in various places in Chassidus it talks about the idea that Mila, including in Geras HaKodesh and Tanya, and in other places it talks about the idea that Mila represents removing the klipa gasa, the coarse klipa that prevents a person from connecting with other coarse. And the Priya represents removing the klipa daka, represents removing a finer kind of klipa, which in and of itself doesn't prevent a person from connecting with other course, but it still interferes, and therefore you have to remove it. So the fact that we're saying that Avraham wasn't commanded in it, so we're saying because Avraham wasn't yet at the level of bringing down those Oda Soyonim, in his times they still had, there was still the Gzera of Oyonim La Yod Lamata, the Tachtonim La Yal Lamaila, there was still a separation between Gashmius and Ruchnius, so therefore you couldn't be commanded to do a mitzvah like that of Priya that would involve being able to bring down a higher level of Lakos that would be opposed by the Priya. And then in different places in Chassidus, it talks about the idea either, when we're saying that the Jews in the Midbar didn't have this mitzvah either. Now, by the way, we don't mean that Yeshua was given a new mitzvah. No new mitzvahs are given after Moshe Rabbeinu. What we mean is that Hashem, to begin with, when he told the mitzvah to Moshe, told them that there was going to come a point when Priya is going to be in operation, namely after they come into Eretz Yisrael. So in Chassidus, it talks about two ideas behind it. One is that they weren't yet on the level to bring down such Oros HaYonim until they came into Eretz Yisrael. The other is, on the contrary, the Dor HaMidbar was on such a high ruchniistic level that the Priya wouldn't interfere with that. Whatever the case, nowadays we have both Mila and Priya, meaning that you have to get rid of the coarser klippa as well as the finer klippa. And then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with discussing why indeed they didn't do bris milas in the desert. Okay, everyone.